Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show. We've got Alejandro Rojas here, and he's the director of the Operations for Open Minds production, the host for Open Minds UFO Radio, editor and contributing writer for Open Minds TV. He's also a blogger for the Huffington Post for several years. Alejandro was the official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network as director of public education. As a UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, many hours in the field investigating anomalous phenomena, close-up personal and personal, Alejandro has been interviewed by media organizations around the world, including the largest cable and network news agencies, with regular appearances on Coast to Coast AM. He's been featured on the Travel Channel, Sci-Fi Channel, National Geographic, and whatever that is. I don't know what that is. But yeah, he's also EMC for the International UFO Congress held outside of Phoenix, Arizona. Well, I will be presenter next month, February 18th through the 22nd. And so without any further ado, I want to welcome Alejandro on the show. Are you with us?
I am. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited about the conference. Of course, we're super busy with it right now since it's only a few weeks away, but we're really excited to have you. I know we've been trying to work this out for a few years now, I think, and the timing and scheduling just didn't work. So really happy that we were able to work it out this year.
Yeah. It seems like, you know, it's funny because Mel Fabregas was having the same problem. He was trying to get me to come on his show. And he sent me numerous emails, and I never got him. It was the weirdest thing. And finally, he just called me, and he had my cell phone number. And he called me. He says, "So what? You don't like me anymore, or something, or what's going on?" I told him, "I never got your emails. I didn't get one of them." And then we found out, you know, we've had some real serious problems, you know, with email and tampering and things like that. So a lot of the events that I was invited to never got there. It's like somebody was in there just, you know, sifting out the you know, some of the bigger events. So, you know, I apologize if I didn't get back to you on some of those. And I think it's because of a lot of the interference.
Yeah.
We have heavy interference on this end.
Well, luckily, there were responses, but I think you were in Japan or something last year. About this time, is that correct,
I think I had a big Japan group at the ranch.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. And then finally, yeah, face-to-face always works best, and we were able to connect at Contact in the Desert, where we both spoke, and we made it happen.
Yeah, it's good. It's going to be interesting. You know, it's kind of interesting because I noticed in the lineup there, some of the speakers you have there, I mean, I guess a large portion of them have a really interesting message. You know, I didn't see a lot of speakers on the light side, so that's going to be interesting coming there and bringing a little more expanded, you know, vision of the universe.
Yeah, you know, usually we try to bring a diverse group, and there are, you know, it's often hard to determine, though, the root message. And with some of these researchers, their message seems to change over time. And, you know, depending on where their research is taking them, I guess, sometimes they feel more positive about interaction and sometimes less. Sometimes they haven't even gotten to the point of really being able to determine you know, whether it's a positive or negative kind of thing. They're just in the middle of what they have. But yeah, there is some really interesting stuff here. And along those lines, I think I'd like to share something with you that you probably would think is pretty interesting.
Yes.
So we're going to have Charlie Foltz and Jim Weiner at the conference. And actually, nobody even knows this yet. We haven't even announced this yet. Unfortunately, Jim is not going to be able to come because he is having some health issues. But what we were able to do is I was able to interview Jim and his brother, twin brother, Jack. Now, these are three of the four people who were part of an abduction situation that happened in the Allegash, Maine. So essentially, they went to Maine to do some canoeing, and fishing, and it was this very kind of out of the way kind of place. And they had seen this object one night, then the next night it was much closer, it moved towards them, they even tried to paddle away from it. The next thing they know, they're at their camp and they go to sleep, and then they remembered having these memories. And these memories of these interactions eventually led them to, there's a book written by Ray Fowler on it, Get Regressions, and they figured out they had these experiences and independently described similar things. But, of course, these things were traumatic, but this probably won't even be part of the presentation, but it will be something that I'm going to put on my podcast later. When I interviewed Jack Weiner, he said he's continuing to have these contacts, but he really got kind of choked up at one moment, or he paused and he's like, oh, Hunter, you know what? I've never told anybody this, but I'm just going to say it. It seems crazy to me. It's wild. I don't understand it. But he said, you know what? When one of these things touched my shoulder, I felt this extreme wave of love, of unconditional love. And it was the most amazing thing, he said, I've ever felt. And they said that they were powered by it. And he thought, what does that mean? How could they be powered by it? How would they power a spacecraft with it? And later he came to realize what they mean is personally they're powered by unconditional love, not their craft or they get electricity from it or something like that. And so he's like, you know, he thinks of that message every day and he tries to be a loving person, but it's hard, of course. People frustrate us and make us mad, but he certainly feels that way, of course, for his wife and his family and stuff like that. But I found that so terribly interesting because I love this case. These guys are so down to earth, just your normal guys. I really like these guys. And I was just really surprised because this is something I had not heard before. And when he told me this story, it was via Skype, but it was video because we're recording these videos so we can show some clips of these guys during the talk.
Yeah.
And so you just see in his face and his mannerisms how impactful this message has been to him. And you could tell this was maybe the first time he was even sharing this information, and how you know how it is when you're sharing something you're not sure if you should, that you feel weird about, you know, you're kind of in uncharted territory, how it can make you kind of wiggle in your seat and feel kind of uncomfortable. And you could see that in him. So that was really cool.
Yeah, that's great to hear that, because I know these things need to evolve. They seem to go through certain steps. And I'm the first one to say, you know, I don't think all ETs are benevolent. I think there are some low-level contacts happening on the planet and that aren't in the highest and best good, but I also think that most of that's being cleaned up, you know, by the more benevolent ones are coming in and taking a more active role. But, you know, it's good to see how these things transform into from, I guess, a lot of personal fear and, you know, freaking people out. You know, obviously a canoe is not the greatest escape vehicle when a UFO is
coming.
It's highly overrated, but, you know, it's what do you, you know, you're totally powerless. I mean, there's nothing you can do when these things happen to you. And it's people fear, you know, change and the unknown, and to be thrown into that situation, I can see it could be, you know, very traumatic. But what I'm seeing, I know with Mary Rodwell too, a lot of her work is that it starts out as trauma and then it ends up, you know, in a more positive note, you know, down the road.
Yeah, I was a good friend with Leo Sprinkle. He is essentially pretty much a mentor for me. And when I first got into these contacts, which I was very skeptical about at the beginning, I liked working with him. I mean, I knew his work. Mm-hmm. He was a professor of psychology. And so I would work with him and bring people to him because I wanted to be responsible and bring them to someone who was educated and had a lot of experience, just in case there was trauma or anything that came up these people needed help with. Mm-hmm. And no doubt Leo Sprinkle's message is just that, that typically, you know, people of course are traumatized, but mostly they don't understand what's going on, you know, and that, even with therapy, it's difficult. You know, a therapist, one that's well trained and is good, it's going to take you through to face your fears and to face these things that you have problems with that you don't want to face, but you have to in order to move on with your life. And so it can be a difficult experience, but that, you know, his message is, it, in the end, you learn from it, you grow from it, and in the end, there typically is these higher understandings, and that largely have involve love, and so, you know, I really love his work for that reason.
Yeah, he's great. We had a friend of mine, Giles Campbell, and he's a geneticist for in Australia. You know, very extremely well educated person. And he came to the ranch and was, I mean, his family and work and everybody were about ready to just, you know, lock him in a rubber room and sedate him and say that's it. Because he was having contact, you know, with these beings. And he was really just losing his mind around it. And so he came to the ranch and told me his story. And he said, so you think I'm crazy, huh? And I said, no. I said, you know how many times I've heard this story, you know, down to details. I said, you're not crazy. You're just being contacted and you need to relax and relax into it, you know, and set aside your fears. And here's some tools and techniques to make sure that these are benevolent ones. And this is how you, if they are malevolent, this is how you, you know, set a boundary and get rid of them. And so it evolved, and now he's got these beings appearing in his living room, you know, and with wonderful messages about the planet and, you know, how we need to rise in consciousness and clean up our environment and things on that level. And if we get together as a collective and rise up and ask for help, that they will come in and help us out. And they already are helping us out quite a bit, but it was, I watched that whole thing evolve, and I see people go through that same process, and you know, now we've got this guy, a scientist that's out there talking about it and making it okay for the other scientists to come forward.
You know what else comes to mind too with speaking along these lines is our first speaker at the Congress is going to be Clifford Mahudi.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if you've spoken with him, and I'm sure you're very well versed on Native Americans and their perspectives on star people. But yeah, his message is really, and plus the way he tells it is great. He's a Zuni elder. He's gotten, you know, this information from a lot of people. He also is part of the Kachina. They call it the Kachina cult, I think. Essentially, just the group that essentially feel like they talk to Kachinas. They bring them in and they you know, are the ones who translate what the Kachinas are all about. They're kind of the guys in charge of Kachinas. And, you know, even though historians feel they know so much, or anthropologists. And he talks about how, that these Kachinas were different star people who helped them and helped us and brought us here and taught us how to create food for ourselves. And, that's what this is all about, they're, you know, that's where these legends come from. And one of the things I love, the story he tells is about the dancing, that they brought us here, that, he even says, you know, the kivas that they do their ceremonies in are round because of their craft, and that we were bored, that we missed them and they just left us and people felt abandoned and they were kind of bored. And so that's when they started coming back periodically to dance with them. And that's where the dancing came from. And they do these Kachina ceremonies and dances. It was for entertainment and to be closer to them. And, you know, it was the Kachinas, you know, further taking care of their earthbound brothers.
Oh, definitely. You know, if you talk to almost every, group, whatever nation you're talking to in the Native American society there, you know, they all point to the stars, and they either point to Sirius, or most of them point to the Pleiades and say, those are our ancestors. And I found out in the Philippines as well, and over here in Hawaii, they point to the Pleiades and they said, that's where their ancestors come from. So there's, you know, a long history that we need to look into. And, you know, I'm part Cherokee myself, but kind of Scotch-Irish Cherokee. So I've been involved in a lot of the ceremonies, and the lodges and things like that, around that energy. And we've had sweat lodges where we will walk out, after the sweat lodge, where everybody's unified in a really good space, and we'll look up and a big golden ship will just come flying right over us, treetop level. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty common. And I've had some conversations with Clifford. I love his work and what he's doing, and I'm total in agreement with it. And he was just shaking his head when I was talking to him. He goes, "These guys don't understand. They don't understand the spiritual side. This is family. These are our ancestors." And I said, "Yeah, I understand." I said, "I totally understand on that one."
Yeah. Yeah, I've grown up in the Southwest. That's why my interests are so much in this area. But there are a lot of stories around, which is what Clifford's trying to break, and others. This idea where when the white people came, they didn't know any of this stuff. They said, we talked with our Star Brothers, and the Europeans were like, "What do you mean? What are you talking about?" And so they decided, uh-oh, we better not have any progress with them along these lines. And that idea has held for now hundreds of years. And there are some, like Clifford, who feel that time has passed and now it is time to share this information so that we can come to a common understanding.
Yeah, I've worked a lot with Stanley Nelk, who's now Golden Light Eagle, and for years, and Wallace Black Elk, and he's passed over, he's crossed over. But getting sharing, they've shared the prophecies and a lot of the other things, and it's amazing. And now it's not prophecy, it's science. When you put those things together, what's going on? it's quite interesting. I really think, like at these UFO congresses, is that everybody needs to put their information out on the table, and each one is just as valid as the other, and we have to get mm-hmm. past pigeonholing this experience, because people ask me, they go, "Well, what is it? Is it ancestors coming back? Is it time travelers? Is it black projects? Is it abductions and cattle mutilations? Which one's right? Which one's true?" And I say all the above.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that's really the perspective we take with the Congress. I mean, we set aside even our own personal biases or worldview. And what we try to do is design or at least represent a wide swath of a wide perspective of what's going on. There's lots of cliques when it comes to this field. So we try to break down those barriers and ignore those walls and just bring a big group. We know that some of the people we bring are at odds with each other. Mm-hmm. They don't like each other or they don't like each other's work, but that's fine. We try to never burn any bridges because we respect that everyone's point of view and that they have one. And that people are interested in what they have to say. So we always, that's one thing we try to do, is we try to, as much as possible, cast the biggest net and, give people a full view of what's going on or what people are looking at and not try to, like you said, pigeonhole or make up people's minds for them, but to try to make an honest attempt at giving them as much information across the gamut as possible so that they can have an understanding of what's out there. And just like we have people approach us, like you said. And, I personally think it's part of growing, which is, you got to do. It's scary, and a lot of people want someone to tell them what are the answers, but people have to ingest the information and make up their own minds. I mean, I personally have faith in everyone, in everyone's ability and everyone's minds and hearts, and that if they digest the information and use their discernment and their heart and their mind to guide them, that they're going to find the right answers for them. Mm-hmm. I can't give you the right answer, but, take the information and make the right decision for yourself.
Yeah, I agree. There's basic principles, our universal law, you might say, that that, you know, I feel if we're within those parameters, you know, we need to use that as tools for discernment. You know, is it empowering you as an individual? Is it helpful? You know, does it help you create your own personal connection with greater God, spirit, whatever you want to call it? You know, I look at those parameters. You know, is it disempowering or is it empowering? You know, and you know, a lot of times, and you know, I always tell people, I don't believe, you know, I don't want to be anybody's guru. I don't want to be anybody's, you know, and, you know, I'm just offering information that has been shared with me, and I'm just passing it on, and people can take what they want out of it. And, you know, and if you want to focus in that direction, that's probably the reality you're going to create.
Yeah. And I don't know if you feel this way, but I also feel like those who want to be gurus, those are the ones that I think people should shy away from. I mean, and that that's kind of scary.
No, I agree. It's very disempowering, you know, and I see that a lot. I mean, there's one group out there. I don't know if I should even mention his name, but he's, you know, they think they're the only true prophet of God and the only contactee on the planet, and they, you know, viciously attack anybody else. And you know, that's having contact, or even crop circle researchers. It's amazing. You know, they just attack everybody. And I always tell people, you know, that's the most disempowering message I've ever heard, because, you know, we all can make our own personal connection to spirit, you know, and we can all have contact, you know, if we focus on it. And, you don't need the go between and you don't need to pay a large portion of your income, you know, to join that group, so they'll tell you what to believe. It's so crazy. It's such a disempowering program.
I agree 100%. I mean, that's what's really concerning, is when people are asked and do pay these large amounts of money. And I've always been frustrated with that. People criticize us that, you know, we charge people for the conference, but of course, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars to put these things on. And we are not, you know, making profits here at Open Minds. And that's one thing I have to really give my boss credit for. He's spending his money, personal money, to make all of this stuff happen. But, and what we do charge is less than other conferences, even though we're longer. So we're doing our best to keep it as accessible as possible. But yeah, the money thing's a big concern. I love, though, the term that you use, disempowering, because I think that's a big key to it. And you know, we should, and I think it's a big deal, you know, it's setting your ego aside. It's not being self-conscious when you want people to be empowered. You're not afraid of others being empowered, but you want that. Rainbow Eagle, I'm not sure if you know who he is. We had him at our first conference, and he's a speaker I really like. He's the same. He's going out and trying to share some of the philosophies of different American Indian tribes to share the enlightenment. And he feels it's time, you know, to share this with the white people. And other elders he's talked to has said that. But he has a great message that I love. He, on his shield, and I forget which nation it is a circle with a point in the middle. And he translates that image as how when you're a warrior, you know, you have to own your power and your energy. So the point is you, but the circle is everyone, and it's all you. The message, how we're all connected, but that we are responsible for each other, that, you know, our energies and what we do, we have to take responsibility for, in that if we're doing something, and taking responsibility for something that you're doing means that you're making that decision yourself, that you're taking that information and you're going with it. But you're also not playing a victim, because even though you own your own energy, we all own our brothers and sisters' energy as well. Mm-hmm. And so when we see someone, it's kind of the message of the Bodhisattva or of the Buddha, especially the Bodhisattva, is that when you see people suffering or not able to move along, it's not your job to be a victim of their suffering, but in a, to help them to evolve and move past. So, I really love that message. And it used to be when I would meditate for the longest time, I would meditate on the people that frustrated me the most and trying to remember, or people that I felt that maybe I had hatred for, that they are my brother and sister, and that, you know, their energies or actions are also partially my responsibility as well, and that I can't dehumanize them, but just recognize that, you know, there's a lot of advantages that I have for not being as hateful or malicious as they are, not having that evil in my heart.
I think it's sad when people get, you know, maybe a lot of religious programming going on, and they try to paint everything dark and everything evil and everything. Mm-hmm. And you see that in a lot of presentations and things like that. And if they would just drop that and look at things, you know, with the Buddha mind, empty-minded, you know, just go into it and just say, okay, I have no preconceived ideas or anything else. I'm just going to see this for what it is. And then, you know, they would get a better understanding of what's really going on, because, you know, the UFOs have been interacting with us since, you know, the beginning of time, and they are actually responsible for almost all of our religions. Go back to the Anunnaki.
I guess, and it's just these messages, which, you know, are even when it comes to these, the religions are the core messages are very positive but the being manipulated and used for grouping people and for power struggles has kind of de-evolved everything.
I agree. You know, if you really look at what the, you know, what the master said originally, you know, in every religion, is that, you know, they all talked about, you know, the unified field. You know, they talked about an all-loving, all-forgiving God, you know, within everyone and everything, and an omnipresent God, you know, and you know, you listen to those, and then you see all the twists and turns and everything that were added to them later, and you end up going off stray. But I think there are unifying threads within every religion that everybody agrees on, and it's just all about being kind to each other and being kind to the planet. You don't need a religion to understand that. I mean, it's very
simple. Yeah. It's funny you say this, and you just had a thought pop into my mind. But when I do, one of the talks I do is ETs and religion. In fact, that's I covered parts of that in that the contact in the desert. Mm-hmm. But what I talk about are religions and their perspectives on extraterrestrials, but also the effect that extraterrestrial belief has had on religions and how it's spawning new religions. Mm-hmm. But one of the arguments I make when I go over these are religions, and I talk about, a lot of people think about ET religions as ridiculous and crazy. You know, they think of Heaven's Gate people, or they think about Raelians, which aren't necessarily the most positive messages. But I go over some of these groups of contactees in the 50s and those messages. And really, my argument is, when you look at lots of these groups like the Aetherian Society or something like that, and those messages, they're positive. And they're inclusive. They talk about how no religion is evil or bad, that we're all saying the same thing. And I'm like, you know, when you look at the tenets of this religion and how peaceful and inclusive it is, you know, it seems more positive than other large mainstream religions. So my argument is that, you know, these messages that are being sent are just as valid as any other religion out there. And I think that's what we really need to reevaluate. But what you made me think of when you were saying this is, now I kind of think of, well, maybe that's what's happening. Maybe it's kind of like a firestorm where you have a forest and you need the fire to go burn out in the old so that the new can spring forth. And maybe it's time that some of these older religions that have kind of gone astray need to either greatly change or just kind of go to the wayside, where these more pure kind of concepts and ideas come forward.
Yeah, I agree. If people knew the history of each religion and how they were formed and who formed them, and what their mindset was, they would come to a whole different conclusion. And I do talk about part of that in my talks about how that came about, and you know where the origin of the wrathful God came from, where you know where the genocidal maniac stuff happened, you know, and why it happened. And so we can let go of that, you know, and stop fearing those images because, you know, it's something in the past that happened and we totally misperceive these things. But I think once you have the understanding and the information, you can let go of the past and say, you know what, I'm not, you know, I feel better now. I feel better about making my own personal connection with Source and I can let go of these old images and not fear, you know, I'm going to get toasted or thrown in a pit of hell or something for making a mistake.
Yeah.
Things like that, you know. So it's.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know how it was. I grew up Roman Catholic, so it was a big deal when I made the transition to kind of letting those, discovering that those were not helpful concepts and letting those go.
Yeah. And, you know, and the Catholic Church is totally turning around and opening up and embracing.
Yeah.
You know, I heard some of the statements that they said. It said they're not to be feared or you know, they're just part of the greater family of man and part of God's creation. You know, some of the statements that they're making are pretty amazing and very open-minded, you know, for most religions.
Yeah, and it really has come from groups like SETI. And because it's a big part of the talk, of course, that I do on the religion is these scientists have really attacked Catholicism because their theology doesn't fit with extraterrestrials, the idea of God or Jesus dying for man, and how does that all fit? And there is a theological problems there. But what they've tried to do is show, regardless of these theological problems, that we embrace the idea, and they've been they've had conferences with astrobiologists. One of their Jesuit priests who's in charge of their astronomy has written articles about extraterrestrials. Yeah, he's the one who wrote the one that extraterrestrials are our brothers. Mm-hmm. And that was in the Vatican paper.
Yeah.
So, and then of course the Pope has come out recently and they've talked even more about, you know, openly taking in extraterrestrials, should there be any, and that we don't have to fear these ideas that there's other beings out there and other intelligences out there. So it is exciting to see that.
Yeah, I've had my own encounters. Most of it's been very benevolent. I've had some, some malevolent ones, and I've had some encounters with our own government, you know, that's been malevolent, and some of their toys, which they use, with deadly force to shut people up and stop them from talking. And I don't think there's a lot to fear coming from the skies or the heavens. I think most of it is within our own ranks, you know, that is the problem. But that's being cleaned up, and people are realizing that, you know, they've made some bad agreements in the past and alignments, and hopefully that's from what I understand, that's all coming to a close, and that the negative aspect of it is being totally shut down and cleaned up.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But, when you meet these beings, if you ever meet one of these, like a Palladian or some of these beings that I've met, there's not an evil bone in their body, and they are powered by love, as your friend said, and they're in pure service mode, and you fall in love with them when you meet them. And I haven't had a negative experience at all. You know, these benevolent ones, they've always been kind and supportive and educational, and you know, their messages, you know, they're here to help us release the past and go forward and evolve, and they really want us to work within universal law, you know, universal principles, you know, which are very basic. You know, it's I always tell people that there's only three, you know, even Jesus laid them out, you know, he said, love God with all your heart and your neighbor as yourself. But if he added one more in there and said, you know, see the creator in all creation, you know, and behave accordingly, the planet would totally turn around, you know. Mm-hmm. So that is universal law, basically, is you know, and it goes more in depth later for those that people need more. But those basic three principles, if each person made their own connection with creator, God, spirit, whatever you want to call it, and realized that in its ultimate expression is just pure love and joy and bliss, and if they started seeing the God in everyone and everything, this planet would turn around immediately.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan. I mean, I'm pretty much agnostic at this point. I'm not really, I wouldn't say religious, but I philosophically am very close to the Buddhist philosophies. And that I think that one thing I really like when the Dalai Lama talks is I think people think that his messages are really simple. They're very similar to what you have just said.
Yeah.
But those simple messages, the things that we tell our kids on a regular basis, often there's like this disconnect. Mm-hmm. I tell my kids, this is how you should live, this is how you should be, but do I do those things when I get in my car and flip off the guy who cut me off?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
When I go to work and I'm fighting and debating over things or making these important decisions about other people? And we forget these very, very simple things that are so important for aligning us, aligning our hearts and souls, and making us travel, you know, our path. And what I love about it is that, you know, it's, you know, using kind of Buddhist terms, you're not just reducing your own suffering, you're reducing the suffering of people around you. So it's mutually beneficial to everyone.
Exactly. Yeah, because you know, the unified field, everything's connected. There's no disconnect other than people's own minds and egos.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. You know, we did a sweat lodge. I loved it. We brought in all these kids, and their parents showed up too, and they wanted to bring their kids to this sweat lodge. And when we were going through the rounds at the lodge, you know, that they were doing their prayers, and these kids, when they got through with their prayers, and you know, and what they wanted to see happen on Earth and things like that, it was so embarrassing to the parents. And you know, the parents after that, they go, you know, I brought my kid here because I wanted my kid to learn about the sweat lodge. And they said, you know, and you know, I was extremely humbled by my kid and how much they do know and how much I forgot. You know, I forgot how to live and how to and what is important. You know, so
yeah, I think that's, you know, I don't have my own children. But my girlfriend has children. I've become really close with her youngest daughter. Mm-hmm. And I've learned so much in that. I love kids. I have a niece that's about her age that I love to death. Mm-hmm. And luckily I got to help raise her. But I think it's so important. And it's one thing I've just came to a realization lately in talking with her, my girlfriend's daughter, is that it's funny how adults, and you see how adults approach children, and it's almost like an ego thing. I think it is a self-conscious thing and a pride thing, how they treat children like lesser beings, or they speak down to them, which I think is something, you know, that is silly to do, and it's wrong. Where when you talk to children like they are another, you know, important being, you know, they're so wise. There's so much wisdom and purity there that translates over, and I think is so fulfilling when you open yourself to it. And I think that by closing ourselves and talking down to children, or kind of in a way dehumanizing or de-empowering them, we're trying to protect ourselves, but really you're putting up this wall, and you're ignoring those little lessons, those pure thoughts and concepts that they take for children, you know, take for granted in their daily lives, that we have forgotten that we shouldn't have. And so you close yourself off to them if you do that. So, yeah, I've personally felt so fulfilled by just interacting with children.
Yeah, I'm really working on bringing more children, having more children events at the ranch. And you know, they just come alive when they come out there, and they get to see the orbs and all the little nature spirits and photograph them. And they, because they're so innocent and pure, the other beings engage them and interact with them. And the ships come in. I mean, we had one kid, we were out there by a campfire and nothing was going on. I mean, there wasn't any activity at all that night. And this one little kid was cooking a marshmallow, and he stood up and he started walking out in the field, and he's saying, "Mr. Spaceman, I have a marshmallow for you." And two ships just decloaked and appeared right over us. It was just amazing.
Really?
Yeah. And it took that innocence of the kid to you know, to open them up, you know. And And he, you know, believed they were there, and I'm sure his thoughts went out, and they're extremely telepathic, and they picked it up, and they totally appeared from him. But, you know, if we go there in our ego and demand that they show themselves and prove who they are and give us the technology and everything else, they just take the high road. They said, well, yeah, we'll be back later. Yeah.
I was thinking there's a story I want to share with you, something we've written about this week that I think is really interesting. If that's cool.
Sure.
Yeah. And this is, I just found out about it just about a week ago, and this was from Andreas Mueller, who's a German paranormal. He's a news blogger, but he blogs about paranormal UFOs and things like this. But I'm not sure if you've heard that there are allegedly drones, but essentially UFOs, because they don't know what they are, that have been flying over French nuclear power plants and one in Belgium for the last few months. The news is reported, and the news is ablaze, especially in Europe and France and Germany and the area about this. But the news reported that in between October and November, there are 18 of these overflights that were witnessed by the people on the plant, security and plant personnel, and they are literally, France is on high alert over this because they can't figure out. They assumed they were anti-nuclear protesters flying drones, but they don't know that because they can't track these things. And I mean, you would have to have a really, I think, sophisticated drone in order to, you know, have it go undetected where these guys don't know who it is. But there was just an interesting development this week on this, where one of the nuclear power plant directors in France was doing kind of a State of the Union for the press or a presentation, and he spoke about the drones, and he made it very clear that these are not drones, they're UFOs. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of because the media and authorities have keep calling them drones, even though there have been witnesses who have said, well, I don't think that this really fits a drone. These are much stranger than that. Yeah. But kind of a cool story that, yeah, this director has come out and said, these are not drones.
Right.
They're UFOs.
Well, they've always had an extreme interest in our nuclear facilities and, you know, and actually our nuclear weaponry. They've from the beginning of the time, they said, get rid of it. You know, don't light that match. And and we've lit it over and over and over again. And you know, one of my understandings is that's one of the reasons why all the cattle abductions are because they're trying to find out how much we have screwed up our environment, you know, and the effects it's having on the animals and things like that. And there's other reasons for it as well. But it makes sense if you're trying to look at all the reproduction, you know, parts on an animal to, you know, to see how much, you know, genetic damage has been done. You know, it would make sense, but that's a whole nother story. But
yeah, it's a story that actually Chris O'Brien is covering at our conference.
Okay.
And it's an interesting because I think he's done a great job with presenting the information without trying to steer people towards one particular answer.
Yeah, it might be more than one. You know,
That's exactly what he says. His thing is that I have a number of different possibilities here, and I think because he wrote a book about it recently, and I think that, you know, my book demonstrates evidence for a number of different possibilities, so I can't really discount any of them.
Yeah, and you know, that's the way to do it because you know, a lot of people have a belief and then they write a book or they form a belief and then they write a book around that belief.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to kind of defend that belief even though a lot of new information comes in. And that's, I always tell people my truth is very flexible. You know, it's like, you know, I'm open to new information constantly and I'm constantly getting new information. And I'm also using a lot of discernment with some of this information when it comes in to see whether or not it's true for me or something I'm going to be, you know, putting out there to others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm really excited about him doing a presentation at the Congress because I think his book is great and I think people are going to find his work along these lines really, really interesting because, as you've mentioned, the phenomena is interesting. And like you said, it does lead towards this idea, and he does cover this at length, you know, that it's monitoring the effects of especially nuclear tests, which were done in like the northwestern part of New Mexico, which is where most of these mutilations have happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That definitely seems to be going in that direction. I know that, you know, I was involved in my grandmother knew the first responders at Roswell, and she was like the school teacher. And she talked to the sheriff and one of his deputies right after that event. And she said they couldn't even hold a cup of coffee. They had their white as sheets, and they said they weren't supposed to tell anybody, but they said we have to tell somebody. And she was highly respected, you know. And my grandfather owned the hardware store that sold, I think it's the Swenson Ranch, sold them a lot of their stuff for the ranch, you know. So they were very involved in the Roswell thing. And so, you know, I heard about that story when I was a kid, and my dad was raised in New Mexico too. So, you know, a lot of those things, it's kind of interesting. My dad would be driving along. My dad would pull over and he'd say, "Get out." And I go, "What?" And he would get out of the car and he'd point up and there'd be like five ships flying over us, you know? So we've had a lot of history with a lot of UFO activity in our family. And I've always, you know, when we live in the high desert, we just look up in the sky and we see them all the time as kids. And I just find it amazing that there's still people out there that don't believe that UFOs exist. It's just, you know, I can't even go there.
Yeah. 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 Speaking of UFOs in the high desert, of course, one of the things that ought to be interesting is Bob Lazar doing a Q&A at our conference. It's the first time he's spoken to a group in public, essentially.
Nice.
And so George Knapp will be doing a talk before that, and they're close, but they're as close as anybody can be. But George Knapp, his talk is really great regarding all of this. He makes a very compelling argument.
Yeah, we have had you know basically you know Bob Dean out there. We've had Wendell Stevens at our ranch, and we've had just about everybody who's who in the field, you know, has been out there. Mary Rodwell. What's her name? I'm trying to think of all that. I mean, we have a massive list of who's who, and Robert Salas, Michael Salas, you know, Alfred Weber, like all the exopolitics people have been out to the ranch, you know, have seen the ships and you know, it's so well documented. We have treetop level ships, massive light ships coming. We have them landing and morphing from one to three and back to one again, and a door opening up on the mountain and things flying out of the door, you know, and flying right over the ranch. So, you know, I'll be presenting that at the conference as well as a lot more information. But, you know, I think it's odd that there are certain people that just will not come and look and see for themselves, you know. And, you know, and then we've had one person come out here that actually spun everything into a negative, you know, saying, "Oh, it's a demonic vortex," or I can't remember what they're
really
saying. Yeah, it was amazing, you know. And he went out and he was going public trying to say, you know, they're talking to the devil, you know, and everything else. And I said, "Well, you know, the only thing negative I see happening is coming from you," you know. It's like but you know, you get those, you get people like that. There's always going to be people like that, and I just take it with a grain of salt. But I think it's amazing when Robert Salas was there and we were talking about, you know, what happened at Malmstrom. And, you know, he said there's a lot more of the story. Some of it, you know, he told me, I'll let him tell it. But he said it wasn't just, you know, shutting down the nukes. There was contact that happened there and a very clear message, you know, that get rid of your nukes, you know. So it's pretty interesting. But they... you know, he got to see some amazing things. He saw a beautiful green ship come down right on the mountain and moving all over the mountain and then take off. And he saw quite a few other things out there. Mm. So people come up there, they're never disappointed, you know, and they, there's always something going on, you know. And, you know, we have cylinder ships, triangle ships, every color you can imagine, you know, purple, blue, green, pink ships, like, everything going on there. And people go, well, that's just the military. And I go, well, they've got quite an arsenal if that's the military, because we've seen everything, you know, and we also have footage of them chasing them, you know, the military chasing them, which is kind of a mute point, you know, because these things just appear and disappear whenever they want.
Yeah.
And then reappear behind the jet after it goes by. So we've watched that happen on quite a few occasions. And we've actually seen jets vanish. You know, a pretty big mothership was flying over, and this jet was after it, full afterburners. And all of a sudden there was no sound. I mean, we were watching it coming up on the UFO. The sound just quit. The lights were gone. The jet was gone. And then the next day we had jets flying, circling our place over and over, and on low enough to where you could actually see the pilot's face. I mean, that's, you know, trying to figure out where their friend went. So, you know, I think if we get too aggressive, you know, they just either move us into another dimension or just bring us on board and have a little conversation with us or something. You know,
do you think that pilot ever returned?
You know, I have no idea. I have no idea what happened with the pilot. There was no explosion. There wasn't any. I think they either just took him on board or just moved him, you know, put him somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might even put him in a different time. He might be looking down, seeing dinosaurs, trying to find a place to land. You know, who knows? But you know, if you go after them with aggression like that, with deadly aggression or deadly force, you know, they got to do something with you. So.
Yeah, well, hopefully he's back.
Yeah, I mean, most of the benevolent ones aren't going to really harm somebody, but they might give you a lesson, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is.
We're talking about Maelstrom, and it makes me think of the French situation. It's just interesting that it's so blatant, whatever is happening over there right now. And France, some people may not know, has a very strong official UFO investigation organization that's part of their CNES, which is their space center, National Space Center, which is our equivalent to NASA. So it's like if NASA had a department that investigated UFOs. So they have not said anything about this, what's been going on here.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that they're looking into it. And I would think that they're going to have to make some sort of statement soon.
I'll tell you something about NASA that people don't understand, but there's about five people in NASA that have their bags packed ready to go. And whenever there's activity or something major going on, they send these people out to investigate.
Hmm.
And I know one of them personally. I won't mention his name because I don't want to get him in trouble, because he came out to the ranch. And it was funny how I found out about him. It's a long story. My brother's a massage therapist and was working on him. And he said, "Hey, you ever been out to Gilliland Ranch?" He goes, "Oh yeah, yeah, we've investigated it." And
really?
Yeah. He said, "We investigated." And he said, "Really?" And he said, "Well, what do you think?" He goes, "It's real. Yeah, it's definitely happening. You know, it's happening there and stuff like that." And then he goes, "Wait a second, what's your last name again?" Brother goes, "Gilliland. You know, I'm his brother. You know, so that's how we found out about it." I was real leery because this guy had this small laptop in there and he had a card. He was swiping through it, and then he was accessing things out in the field. And I go, "Where are you getting the signal out there? You know, there's no signal out in that field." And you know, and I was kind of, and he's a really nice guy, you know, super nice guy. But you know, they do have people they send out. They have their own group, and they do investigate almost everything. Anything where there's major activity, they're there.
Hmm. Wow, that's pretty interesting. Well, how did he react when he found out that that was your brother?
Well, then we became good friends. And so I showed him the footage.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And he came out with his wife, and she's highly involved in NASA too as well. So they, I wish I could mention his name, but I know he'd get in trouble, so I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I showed him the footage and I said, "Well, what do you think?" I said, "Here's this massive triangle that is making a right angle turn, and you can see it's transparent, you know, and it's miles long." And he looked at it and I said, "Everybody's trying to say this is the NOS satellite, this triple satellite, you know, thing for looking for submarines and things." And he goes, "I worked on the NOS satellite." He goes, "I'll show you." And he opens up his computer and goes, "Here it is, right here." And he said, "That was a total failure." He said it's not the NOS satellite. He said what happened was they couldn't get it, keep it level. It just kept turning straight up and down, and so it was dysfunctional, and they just abandoned it. So he said it's not. He said that's just a cover story. So, you know, a lot of the, you know, I have other people I know that worked, you know, on the highest level in the back engineering and the other stuff. So I've got some really good connections, you know, which are, I, you know, obviously I can't reveal who they are, but they keep me informed, you know, as to what we have and what's not ours.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, we're really excited about your talk. I'm sure a lot of people are going to love to hear this stuff at the conference.
Yeah, it's going to be a different story. And a lot of the things I'm going to share, I know a lot of people aren't going to be ready for it now, but mm-hmm. when I share it, it'll come to pass. You know, it's like some of the books I wrote in 1982 talk about everything that's happening now, that's unfolding now. And people are shocked when they look at the date on when these books are written. They go, oh my God, they said everything you've said is happening, you know. And so, you know, it's like just information given to me. But you know, we're gonna do it again, and you know, I'm sure some people have trouble absorbing it. And I'm gonna say, you know, I'm just gonna share something with you, put it on the shelf, and see, watch it unfold. You know?
Mm-hmm. And I can't remember. Are you gonna have a table?
Yeah, I'll have a table, and I'll have my books, and
cool,
and everything else. I have some DVDs as well.
Cool. So people will be able to talk to you throughout the whole event.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool. Great.
Yeah. And, you know, don't, you know, I always tell people don't fear asking the tough questions. You know, it's like, the, you know, there's no question that should be, you know, hidden or whatever. And we'll see if we can bring a different understanding to it.
Yep. Well, that's awesome. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So, and I'm excited about, you know, a lot of fun stuff. And then I got a message too recently, just like yesterday, that, you know, we're going to have John Burroughs, one of the witnesses at the Rendlesham Forest,
oh, yeah,
and his lawyer, because the military at first said he wasn't there in 1980. He wasn't in the Air Force. So they had to work with John McCain's office to get them to correct that. But they still haven't released his medical records. Mm. So John and Pat is John's lawyer, feel that, you know, they're classified, and McCain's office even said, we couldn't get the medical records. I don't think they're ever going to get rid of that or release that. But they're going to be at the conference, and Pat, his lawyer, just sent me a message yesterday saying they have some big news that came from McCain's office regarding the case that they're going to be sharing.
Oh,
so that ought to be interesting, because John Burroughs feels that he has some heart conditions related to that UFO event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't, you know, I know a lot of times the electromagnetic fields around those ships, you don't want to get certain ones, you don't want to be too close to them when they go off or when they're functioning.
Yeah. But, can be some dangerous business.
Yeah. Most are okay, but some of the more primitive ones actually put off some radiation, and some of the fields are not healthy to be around. If you're inside the ship, it's okay. But, you know, if you're outside, you want to let things cool down a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
After the landing, before you walk in.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, it's getting real exciting. I'm going to share a lot of new information and a lot of the new manifestations that are happening up there at the ranch, and try to tie, you know, the ancient religions and the UFOs bring a spiritual side to it, and show how they all can fit, you know, they all come mm-hmm. together.
Yeah, kind of, you know, who does a good job of that, or who's always at the conference too, is Jaime Musan.
Yeah.
You know, does kind of a lot of tying together and everything. So mm-hmm. he'll be there doing his thing again. And, of course, people can go see all this at UFOCongress.com.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll definitely put a link up on the show.
Cool,
and,
thanks.
And we're going to put that information out, you know, on our, we have a pretty massive email list, so we'll definitely be promoting that. And I have on my radio shows, actually. I've promoted it quite a bit already, but we'll keep promoting it.
Thank you.
And
yep. And then the France story, which I think is going to be something that's going to continue to develop, because it's getting a lot of attention. You can find that at openminds.tv, and that's where you'll find our site and our podcast, of which we've had you on the podcast before.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I have to do that one again. Yeah, we've got about 3 minutes left on the show, so
okay.
You know, I definitely want to push the event. I know you've got some great speakers there, and I guess you're filling up fast. So people need, if they are going to come to the event, they need to get in contact with you. Now, what's the best way for people to sign up for the event?
Going to UFOCongress.com is the best way, and that way, you know, signing up online. If you have to call in, that's fine too. We've got the phone number there. It's actually 1-877-UFO-0110. But people can go there, and then you can also see all of the speakers too. It ought to be pretty interesting. We've got like Joshua Warren is going to be speaking about the Brown Mountain Lights. That's really interesting. Sighting that's gone on forever. The U.S. Air Force actually has investigated those, and they couldn't figure them out. But he helped consult for a movie recently regarding the Brown Mountain Light. So he'll be talking a bit about that as well. And then some people that others haven't heard of, like Joan Bird. I don't know that she's ever given a talk, but she's a zoologist. She's got a PhD in that. And she lives in Montana, and she's written a book on UFOs in Montana. So that's kind of exciting when you have, you know, kind of a mainstream regular scientist getting so interested that they write a book on it. And her book is great. It's very academic. She did a lot of great research on it for that one.
Yeah, and I'm hoping my friend Giles Campbell writes a book. You know, I'm sure he's probably in the process of doing it, you know, about his experience, just to help other scientists. And I think it's great that scientists are coming out. We had a lot of physicists come out to the ranch, and we had some even film some of the process-oriented therapies we do with their equipment, and they were just freaked out when they saw the footage because they saw the whole energy in the room totally transpire and people's bodies pixelate into light. That's on the website at eSETI.org. But, you know, I love when scientists come out and validate, you know, the spiritual side of things and what's really going on. And it's always good to have them, you know, open up to, you know, a greater reality in the other dimensions.
Yeah, there's a lot more scientists interested in this sort of thing than people realize.
Mm-hmm. We get quite a few at the ranch. It's amazing. We've had triple PhD Boeing engineers and Lockheed engineers, you know, Skunk Works people, Air Force base commanders and pilots and, you know, air traffic controllers, you know, all on record that have come to the ranch and have seen the ships. And so it's quite a, you know, and I'll talk about that during the presentation, But anyway, it looks like we're hitting the end of the hour here, so I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and we'll be seeing you on the 18th through the 22nd.
All right, we'll see you soon. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, take care.
Bye.
All right, it's James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. Okay, we got it.
All right, cool. Well, thanks.
All right, hey, thanks for coming on the show.
Yep, I've got to run. We're, of course, super busy.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's going to air Saturday night at 8 on BBS Radio.
Cool. Yeah, I saw that. So I'll go send that out to people. I already retweeted your tweet, but I'll go send some messages out there for that.
Great.
Thank you so much. We're excited to have you.
All right. We'll see you soon.
See you soon.
Bye.